You're listening to the podcast with a K, available on iTunes, Stitcher.com, Audioboom, and thepodcast.co.uk. And if you're listening, I'm so sorry. Or, leave a review or something. Thanks.
Hi, it's the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corley. He's Brian Terranova. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Christian.
Now, we haven't spoken for a few weeks, have we?
No, we haven't.
I've missed you, man.
Oh, well, thanks. I mean, that is to say, I've missed you too.
So we did the... I did a podcast with James, and then either side of that, we did the podcast without me, which was the... that's getting ahead of myself. What was it? Oh, the Haunted Nymon podcast, which we did in two parts, which is you, James McLean, and Gareth Kavanagh. Now, we're planning on doing a Logopolis one sometime early, middle of March. So you can look forward to that, Cast Urbrights. No, you're not Cast Urbrights. You might be Cast Urbrights, who have just decided to listen to the podcast with a K. But actually, my was Podcasterites. And I am still...
Still doing that thing,
yeah. Hey, I don't know if we're allowed to mention this, but we're going to. Anyway, some of the guys from Castorbis have left Castorbis, and they're setting up their own website. Did you see that?
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, you did see that. So that's called The Doctor Who Companion. I think it's a .com or a .co.uk, I'm not sure, but it prefaces with The to distinguish from a different site. It looks like it's going to be quite good. I'm really excited for the guys. I might ask them if they will accept a contribution from me at some point. Actually, that's how excited I am for them.
Wow, fancy.
Yeah, so that looks good. So we'll have more for on that for you, dear listener, in the future when they let us talk about it, basically. Okay, there's a couple of things that I have to mention. Then we're going to do a tiny bit of news, and then we're going to be talking about songs inspired by Doctor Who. We're not talking about Time Lord Rock, okay? We're not talking about Trock. We're not doing that stuff. We're talking about, like, pop songs that got into the charts that did well. Some of which didn't do quite well. from across Doctor Who's 50 years, mainly the classic era. But before that, I was on the Diddly Dum podcast, which is a rival podcast, I suppose.
Wow, yeah, traitor.
Yeah. I was on their podcast number 51, and I was... chatting there about how the podcast started, so where Brian gets a few mentions. It's called it's called Diddly Dum Podcast 051, Podcasters Assemble 2. So I have a big chunk from about 57 minutes to 1 hour 21, so it's about half an hour of it is me talking to Hayden, and there's a few other people on there as well. There's Erica Ensign from the Verity podcast, Mark Atkinson from Prog to Who, myself, and Cannon from Who's He. So the link will be in the show notes. You can click on over to that and have a listen to it. It's a nice little chat, and it's turned out quite well. So that's quite cool. Now, I'm going to have to whip open my email inbox for this. I'll say whip open because it's a purely... It really exists. My email inbox is actually a small person who I need to whip in order to open it up. Not quite.
Nice.
Not quite. Ah, that's the kind of thing James would say, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, someone's got to fill that gap this week, really.
Yes. And hopefully James will be back with us in a couple of weeks' time as well when we do our next commentary, which I've already mentioned. I'm just looking for this message. Oh, someone's asked me to mention something, and I really do... Oh, it's Michael, isn't it? That's right. I'm sure it will turn up in a moment. Yeah, here we go. Yeah, it's from Michael Herbert, and he's teaching an 11-week evening class on the history of Doctor Who starting on Monday the 11th of April at Aquinas College, Stockport. This is the only evening class on the subject of Doctor Who in Britain. There's a few details there. I will. There'll be a link in the show notes to the interview that Michael gave by his last year's course. There's a little bit of endorsement from Fraser Hines More from him later. He says, I wish all the course members the best of luck and hope you will have as much fun as I did working with the lovely Patrick Troughton. Michael Troughton also sent a message. I know my dad would be very honoured, if not a little amazed, to be included in such a course. For more information, you can contact Sheila Lahan, L-A-H-A-N, that might be Lahan, but I've said Lahan, at Aquinas College, Stockport on 0161 419 9163, or email Sheila at aquinas.ac.uk. There will be a link to the course in the show notes as well, so you can, if you're in the UK, in the Manchester area, or even better still in Stockport, and you want to attend the course, you can do. So that's that bit. Now, what I was initially going to do, as I said to Brian before the show started, there's this little bit of news I want to do, but basically it's a bit dull compared to the other thing. So, basically, Doctor Who exec Moffat says it's time for someone else to have a go. That was back on February the 11th. I don't think anyone would argue with that, would they?
No, not at all.
Okay, so that's that bit of news. Now, the other bit of news, though, is this thing about the Large Hadron Collider. This been released. There's this thing about the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland at Kern. They are hoping to make contact with a parallel universe.
Oh, right, yes.
In the very near future. I don't know about you, that doesn't sound entirely safe to me.
Well, according to lots of movies and TV shows that I've seen, it usually doesn't end well.
Exactly, yeah. Something to worry about there. So that's that. And there's also, in another surprising, strange news of strange sci-fi news of the day, Now, I don't know about you, dear listener, but I spend a bit of time over the years reading about weird stuff. About 10 years ago? What year was it, 10 years ago? 2005? Yeah, about 10 years ago, I was commissioned to write a book about the Beatles. It was not a detailed book or anything like that. It was more of a why the Beatles are still relevant in the 21st century. And one of the Brian may remember this because I think I talked about it with you quite a bit at the time. And one of the things that I was distracted by heavily was the whole Paul is dead thing, which is, if you don't know, is basically the theory that, well, the claim theory, conspiracy theory, whatever, that Paul McCartney died in an accident or was killed by the mafia and replaced by a double, who's the guy we see now. One of the other things I've found myself reading about a lot over the years are the moon landings, and not just whether they happened or not, but the things that happened that were covered up. And one of the things that's been covered up for years, I've read about previously, is that the astronauts in Apollo 10, when they were circumnavigating the moon, went on the dark side of the moon, out of radio contact, and heard music in space. And this has been covered up for years, and it's just been declassified. Do you see that?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Just today, I think I've commented on it on Facebook. Quickly, go to Facebook, Brian. Go to Facebook. I know you don't want to, but go there.
Okay.
And obviously there's Doctor Who relevance, because the TARDIS gets shot at by the dark side of the moon in the beginning of the invasion, dear listener. That's right. The invasion, which you should probably watch sometime soon.
Wow, nice. Look, I've looked it up on Facebook.
Yeah, it's on my page, if you haven't found it anywhere
else. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. I found it right on your page.
Yeah, it's really weird that because there's other stuff that I've read at the same time as reading about that in the past, such as there being structures on the moon.
Oh, yeah, that I've heard about, the structures I've heard about. And, this is the first time I've heard anything about music, though.
Right. So it makes me wonder whether all these things they're being classified or covered up or dismissed as nonsense concerning the moon landings, and this is obviously a moon landing that has taken place, so we'll forget about the whole moon landings didn't happen theories, were actually real, like structures on the moon, and like a space, there's another one that's a spacecraft with an alien body inside it that they brought back. All very strange. But so yeah, music in outer space, nice sort of a thought. So on the subject of music, you see what I did there? That was completely...
Oh, yeah. I was waiting for it.
Completely accidental.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised that even happened. Okay, so we are talking about Doctor Who music this week. We're not talking about, we're not talking about Fleet music. We're not talking about Kev McCulloch. We're not talking about Murray Gold. We're talking about the songs that were inspired by Doctor Who. So what Brandon and I are going to do is we're kind of going to do a sort of commentary on these pieces of music. So we're going to be, you're probably not going to be able to hear them too well, but that's okay because they're going to be in the show notes and we don't want to upset anyone's copyright anyway. So first of all, I can barely bring myself to say this one. Put it this way, we're not starting with the best one, okay? We're starting with Doctor in Distress, which is from 1985 and was part of the Bring Back Doctor Who campaign performed by a group of celebrities under the banner Who Cares? Among the people on it are Colin Baker and Nicola Bryant. I think Nick Courtney's in there as well. The stars of Bucks Fizz, who Brian probably has no idea who Bucks Fizz are.
No idea.
No, they were a four-piece who won the Eurovision Song Contest in 1981, which was kind of a big thing, the Eurovision Song Contest in Europe, across Europe. So they're in there as well. It is indeed a very strange thing. Anthony Ainley is in there as well, but also in there are Ultravox and a band I'm sure Brian has heard of, the Moody Blues.
Yeah, I have.
And it's... when I was listening to this or watching this the other day, I know the video is very kind of it's got some sci-fi sort of aspect to it with animation in it, which was very of the time. But one thing I did notice is listening to it. Oh, here's Colin. And there's Nicola. Yeah, so one of the things I did notice is that although lyrically it's not a great track, it's better than a lot of stuff that's in the charts at the moment.
Really?
I feel, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe,
by the way.
Maybe I was being charitable at the time, I thought that. What did you want to say?
Yeah, I want to say that I don't know if the audience was able to hear that, but I wasn't able to hear that when we paused for Colin or Nicola. So hopefully the recording's picking it up for them. I know you said that you put it in the show notes, but just in case.
Okay. So are you not playing it at the same time as me?
No.
Oh, I thought that's what you were doing.
I played them. I've been there.
Okay. So what I'll probably have to do then is just bring them in. Don't worry about that too much. So, yeah, interesting. What do you think of the video for Doctor in Distress? In terms of the graphics?
It was of the time.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, I was really being overly charitable before, because there's another minute of this to go. And, I think it'd be nice to stop it about now. Oh, here's Nick Courtney. Oh, and Anthony Ainley, without a beard. I think what's particularly interesting about the song is how few of the Doctor Who stars can actually sing.
Anthony Ainley kind of looks creepy without the beard.
He does, doesn't he?
That smile was just... there's something wicked about that smile.
Yeah, I think there's Faith Brown in there as well, who's in Attack of the Cybermen. She's a comedian over here. Famous for stuff. I'm trying to think of something now. Yeah, she was an actress comedian anyway. And if we weren't so far through the song now, I would have stopped it. But fortunately, it's happened already. Just cancel that. You know, if you were going to give a song marks out of 10, Brian, where would you put that?
I wouldn't have it very high.
I thought you were going to say I wouldn't.
Yeah, it's... No, it's not very good. It's not very good. I'd have to be extremely low. Where would I put that song, Doctor in Distress? Wow, I think it was what it was, a last-ditch effort to try and save the show and not in any way to try and create a hit. I would put it at a one.
Okay, this is the Time Lords, who were probably better known to most people as the KLF, with Doctor in the TARDIS. Doctor. Now, this song marries several past songs. Yeah, there's Rock and Roll Part 2 by Gary Glitter. There's Blockbuster by The Sweets. And there's something else in there as well, and I can't quite think what it is. No, can't quite remember. Obviously, there's Daleks, Dalek-esque voices in there. I seem to recall at the time the BBC or Terry Nation refused the Time Lords the permission to use the Daleks on stage on the Top of the Pops performance and in the video. So that's why I end up with these four Time Lord cars driving around what seems to be Aldridge in Aldridge? I forget where they filmed the Demons. That's what it seems to be. I'm not sure if it actually is. I absolutely loved this song as a kid. I don't know about you, Brian.
You know, I actually did. I probably found it more so when I was in high school, because that's when the whole kind of resurgence for Doctor Who thing happened to me. But yeah, I remember playing the heck out of this song. I would rate this one much higher than the last one. I'll give you that. Although I hadn't seen the video until years later. To me, it was a CD. It was just a song. I didn't have a video for it.
Right. I mean, there's not an awful lot happening in the video, is it, really? It's just a car driving around and two square Dalek-type creatures. The Top of the Pops performance was quite interesting because I'm pretty sure they had two drummers or a drum kit that had two bass drums, which was quite unusual at the time. And obviously, this is... based on the Gary Glitter song Rock and Roll, and you know, Gary Glitter being a character who's his criminal past has obviously been reported on quite a bit, so you know, it was always brings a bit a modicum of discomfort when listening to anything that he's been involved with. And he did appear on some of the Top of the Pops appearances of the Time Lords performers. There was a version called Gary in the TARDIS. So that's that. So that's been one of my favourite things. Okay, here's Roberta Tovey, who played Susan in the two Peter Cushing Doctor Who movies back in the 60s. This is Who's Who. Now already she surpassed the vocal performances of the Doctor Who stars in Doctor in Distress.
Yes. It actually, it fits the era that it was made.
Absolutely does, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not entirely sure it fits the show, but it fits the era that it was made. Interesting choice, this video, I assume, fan made to set it to the new Doctor Who.
Yeah,
rather than... I don't know.
Obviously there probably wasn't a video of the original thing. I don't even think she'll have performed it live anywhere, to be honest with you. Happy to be proven wrong on that, dear listener. But we'll give you these videos in the show notes, and then you can join in with them as well if you can't hear them too well during the podcast. But the video we're watching here, you'll see it's got the clips. So like the moment where he's equally at home in a spaceship or on a horse, as a scene from The Girl in the Fireplace with the Tenth Doctor leaping through the mirror. I'm looking at a bit of Bernard Cribbins at the moment. It's a bit of... I think what they've done with this video, as Brian says, a fan video, is they've kept it quite frivolous, pretty much like the song itself. Which, mercifully short though it is, we're still only 1 minute and 41 seconds through it. So now it's time to have a sip of your cup of tea for the musical interlude.
Ooh. It could be Mars or Venus, but whatever he may do, he'll always be a friend of mine.
Yeah.
Doctor Who.
Which is strange, because he's your grandfather. What's going on?
This is true.
no one really Most people didn't pay attention to song lyrics in those days, did they?
Understood. Yeah.
Okay. Are we ready for the Go-Go's?
Sure. Let's.
Now, this isn't the Go-Go's like Belinda Carlisle and Jane Wheedlin and all the other ones. This is some Go-Go's from the 60s. I'm going to spend my Christmas with a Dalek.
This one was on my Christmas playlist for quite a while until people just didn't quite understand it, and I got tired of explaining it, so it had to go away.
This is one I'm least familiar with.
Oh, yeah? I had this one, because I enjoy this, going to spend my Christmas with a Dalek, and painting the Daleks in a pretty light, in a good light, it was very strange. But I had this one, and I had the "What do you get a Wookiee for Christmas?"
What do you get a Wookiee for Christmas?
You know that one, don't you?
I don't know that. No.
The whole they go through all these things that it's like, you know, he's already got one of these, he's got this, he's got that. But what do you get a Wookiee for Christmas when he's already got a comb? Apparently, since a Wookiee only needs a comb, what you get is love and understanding.
Oh,
yeah.
As I should say.
There you go.
Yeah. So again, I'm going to spend my Christmas with the Dalek. It's very much of its time.
Yeah, this is true.
I like the little
guitar. It is weird though. Why is there two Go-Go's?
Well, there's two Nirvanas.
Is there?
Yeah, there was a Nirvana. There was a British Nirvana in the 60s, around the same time as this, probably. Who were a kind of psychedelic group, I think.
Oh, wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens more than you would care to know, I think.
Learn something new on the podcast every week.
Every week, indeed. I wonder who the Dalek is on this.
Not a very good one. But, yeah. Which one was it? Destiny of the Daleks? Had those awful voices? No. Which one was it that just had them redubbed? Oh, it was Pertwee one.
Oh, was it Day of the Daleks?
Yes, that's it. Day of the Daleks.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas to you, Christian.
Well, thank you. I'm touched that the Daleks think to witness Christmas before destroying us.
Yeah.
They're not as bad as bastards. Yeah, they're not as bad as people make out. Okay, sure. Are you ready for some Fraser Hines?
Always.
Okay. This is Who's Doctor Who by Fraser Hines. I love the beginning of this.
Trying to be very rocking.
And then it goes like this.
What is that? Like, that's too funny. Why start so heavy?
I do like the guitar on this, though. It sounds like someone. I think what would be fantastic about this, right, would be to find out that the session guitarist on this was Jimmy Page.
Oh my god. Do you gotta wonder who some of these people are. I gotta say, though, the verses sounds like he's trying to do, like, his best version of a Monkees song.
Yeah, I was thinking Monkees.
Yeah, and then you get to the choruses and it just kind of goes away from there, but I liked Punch and Judy Man. I think he did good with that for some reason. But this one, I'm not feeling it. No offense, Fraser, I love you. You know that. But still.
I think so far, of the songs we've heard, this is the best one, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's in fairness, it's a very well-structured song.
Yeah.
I do think that Fraser is having some issues hitting certain notes. But, you know. for somebody just starting out, it's not that bad.
There's a bit of an American accent going on in his vocal there as well.
Oh, yeah. Doctor.
Yeah. So, that we can... I'm a big fan of being more honest about your vocal performances and mimicking other accents.
But is that something that you think is intentional, trying to mimic an American accent, or do you think that's just how things come out when you sing?
No, I think it is intentional. I think it's from people like Elvis Presley and you know, the American rock and roll guys back in the 50s and early 60s. I think a lot of people wanted to be like them, so they mimicked them. Like when the Beatles first started out, their vocal performances were different to what they were later on when they started to sound more authentic. But I mean, if you listen to the Kinks always sound like Londoners. They never tried to sound like Americans.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, so that's Fraser Hines with Who's Doctor Who. Okay, now the next track, and this is our last track for this, before we start talking about something else, is this is John Pertwee. And this is, I have got to confess, Brian already knows this because I've mentioned it to him already. This is my ringtone on my phone.
This is difficult for me because I want to skip the ad, but it's an ad for the new X-Files episode. So, having great difficulty here catching up to the song with you.
Well, let me know when you're ready.
Fine, I'm there, I did it.
Okay, so I'm about 20 seconds through.
Alright.
Now, the version we're watching has got a brilliant video of Pertwee highlights on it. I love the way
they've... I get mixed feelings about this. Right. It's like... What's that?
No, go on.
It's like it's obviously the Doctor Who theme. It's a different arrangement. It's neat. It's working, and I like his like poetry reading kind of thing. But you put the two together, and I'm not sure. But it also kind of works.
Yeah, I didn't used to like it. I remember back in, long time ago, when we did a podcast. You put this on the end of the podcast.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, one of our first run of podcasts, and. I might be in the beginning, I'm not sure, but it was definitely on there, and I wasn't that keen on it then. But these days, I absolutely love it.
That's weird. He is sort of like the William Shatner of Doctor Who, though, isn't he?
I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah, well, you know.
I do love the arrangement and the way the riff drives. I think it's the... You know, the... the Peter Howell version of the theme tune. It's very close to that in terms of the way it drives. Not being, you know, I'm not saying Howell's copied it or anything. What I'm saying is they both drive forwards a lot. Whereas the versions of the theme tune before this are just, more or less, they're experiments in electronica, I suppose. You know? Well, this, it drives. I like that drive in the theme tune. A bit like the Eccleston and Tennant versions of the theme tune. They drive as well.
So
there's six songs. Now, I know I gave Brian the opportunity to rate Doctor in Distress, and he said 1 out of 10. And personally, I think he was charitable with that. But, I mean, how would you rate the others? We've got Doctor in the TARDIS. Where would you place that?
Oh, Doctor in the TARDIS. That was the one I liked, right? No, I like that one. I used to have fun with that one. I would give it an 8 because, you know, it got me into the Doctor Who mood. Sure.
Got you in the mood, did it?
Okay. In the mood, yes.
In the mood, okay. So I'd probably give that one 7 or 8. I'm not sure. Maybe 7.5. Roberta Tovey. And now I think it's a lovely little ditty. Not my type of thing. I'd probably give it 5 or 6.
Yeah, I'll stick with 5 with you, but I'm not really sure I want to do that. But okay.
Okay. Okay. What about the Go-Go's? I want to spend my Christmas with the Dalek.
Since I used to enjoy that around Christmas time, I'm going to go ahead and give it a 6 just because it was fun for that. But if it's a song in its own right that you're just going to listen to because you're like, damn, I got to listen to that Go-Go song. It's not really going to be high up there. But as a fun little cute Christmas song, whatever, sure, I'm going to give it a 6.
So 6 at Christmas. Okay, yeah. I'd probably say 5 or 6 at Christmas and 3 or 4 the rest of the time.
There you go.
Okay. Fraser Hines.
I'm torn because I'm a Monkees fan, and I think he was trying to do like his best kind of Monkees tune there, or maybe obviously emulate other songs of the era, but you know, kind of enjoyed it. I'm gonna give him 6.5 to a 7.
Okay, I'm gonna give it 7. I think it was really good. And what about John Pertwee, I Am the Doctor?
It's tough because, like you, it took me a while to really appreciate this song, but there's something about it, like even now it's still in my head after just listening to it. I'm going to give him an 8.
Okay.
Just because.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, really, I mean, it depends how you contextualize all this. Are we just contextualizing them as a group? Are we rating them against each other? Are we rating them against, you know, we're not really rating them against the great pantheon of rock music, are we, I suppose? Either way, I would give John Pertwee 8 or 9, I think. It's easily my favourite of the lot, I beg your pardon. So, yeah, it's interesting that there's this kind of bunch of songs that are inspired by Doctor Who, and that this kind of thing has kind of stopped, other than that whole Troc world, which is, you know, it's a bit weird, in all honesty. And there's nothing that's gone really mainstream. But of these, I think there's probably only the Doctor in the TARDIS one that people would recognise. Which for something like Doctor Who, a phenomenon like Doctor Who, is quite unusual. I mean, you know, you might mention something like One of These Days by Pink Floyd, which starts off with a Doctor Who-style riff. But on the whole, do you think it's strange that there isn't more songs about Doctor Who? Or is that they... I mean, how many songs about TV shows are there anyway?
I don't know about TV shows, but I do know that obviously people have done a few Star Wars songs. I mean, as I said, I pointed out the what do you get a Wookiee for Christmas kind of thing. Mm. I know the X-Files at least has the Bree Sharp song for David Duchovny, Why Won't You Love Me? Nice. I don't know if there's many others about the X-Files. I know they get a mention by the Bare Naked Ladies. But how many directly written for those particular shows? I'm not coming up with any aside from those few references, whereas Doctor Who's got quite a few.
Mm.
And of course, you know, not that we really want to get into it, but Troc got started because of Doctor Who. Not that it's a genre that's going to stick around, but it got started that way.
Yeah. So it's a strange one, Troc.
Yeah.
Like Rock with a W, a wizard rock from Harry Potter. All weird stuff. Okay. So songs. Tell us, dear listener, which ones you like and which are your favourites. I'd be interested to know whether the John Pertwee one really is as good as we think it is, or whether or not you think it's like absolutely bobbins and are two completely disparate elements that should not have been put together. Or you might think that the Roberta Tovey song is the best Doctor Who of all time. Best Doctor Who related song of all time. You probably don't, but you know, you might do. So tell us what you think of those. Brian Terranova.
Me.
You. I'm interested, and you know, this might turn out to be a very short item. Are you doing any cosplay appearances this year?
Yes. I'm definitely doing, excuse me, L.I. Who again, which will be in November.
Okay, yeah.
Quite possibly doing L.I. Geek, which, if I'm not mistaken, is April.
L.I. Geek?
L.I. Geek, yeah. It's an extension of L.I. Who, but it's a more broad-spectrum fan base rather than just Doctor Who.
Okay.
So it's still in New York, still in Long Island, hence the L.I.
Yeah.
Outside of that, other things are open. I'm not entirely sure what I'm doing this year, to be honest. But yeah, those. Why do you ask?
I'm just interested to know if you're planning on any Hawkeye cosplay.
Oh, not in the near future, no.
Oh, that's a shame. Actually, I was hoping to have Bruce on this week's podcast.
That's right, you did say that.
Yeah, but maybe that'll happen another time. But basically, dear listener, my little boy Bruce, he's got a tin of... He loves colouring in, he loves sticker books and stuff like that, and word searches. They always have word searches in them, which is good for him to learn how to read and write and what have you, and spell. And often they come in tins, and he's got one tin that's the Avengers. And in this tin that we got him just a couple of days ago, there's a big, you know, fold-out A2-sized colouring-in thing going on for him to a big picture, sort of an action picture of all the Avengers leaping forwards out of the page, and we're going through all, and he's calling them all in. And, you know, he hasn't seen the Avengers films, but he's seen the Avengers cartoons. He's seen some comic books, and he's got all the sticker books of the Avengers and that. And there's this one guy with holding a bow, and he's got arrows on his back, and he's got spiky hair, and he's wearing glasses, and he looks like our very own Brian A. Terranova. Hi, Brian.
Hey.
Hey. And he looks absolutely nothing like Hawkeye. So I sent you a picture of this, didn't I?
Yeah. It is weird. It does really look a lot like me.
Yeah, I really wanted to colour it in. As I said it before, I really wanted to colour it in, and we'd maybe have it on the podcast this week as the graphic for this week's podcast. But unfortunately, Bruce wanted to colour in this picture of the Avengers and then give it to his granny for her birthday.
Because that's what she's totally into.
Well, exactly. How could I disagree with that?
Yeah.
Inappropriate presents for in-laws, I'm all for.
I'm even contemplating going to L.I. Who in November, just as me, you know, forget the costume. Because last year I went, and it was fun, but, you know, I didn't cut my hair back to a 10th Doctor style, although technically it was more like a season 2 style, you know?
Mm-hmm.
People don't care, man. Like, that haircut change made all the difference. Like, but I hardly got any notice, you know? Like, it wasn't like other cons where I get stopped, like, every 5 seconds for a photo, you know? And that happened. I went to the Ren Fair in a similar fashion, and it was just kind of like, huh. It seems that the hair really, truly does make all the difference, and that also kind of changes the fun of it for me. And, of course, the show has changed the fun of it for me as well, you know? Mm. So I decided, you know, what the hell, just go be that guy that I got there in the first place, because I'm a guy who talks about Doctor Who on the internet, you know, technically, sort of officially. Yeah, right? I know, weird.
Hey, maybe you should grow your hair and then get it permed and go as a fourth Doctor and really screw with people.
I know, I should. one of my friends was trying to talk me into doing the eighth Doctor.
Right.
You know, and I like the eighth Doctor. I've always liked that outfit. I've always wanted that outfit, but I'm not dropping that kind of money for another outfit, you know what I mean?
Well, also, Paul McGann's quite short as well. I don't think it sits well on taller people.
That outfit or that hair?
That outfit.
Maybe? Couldn't you just tailor it to fit?
Yeah, but I don't think it looks right on a taller frame, generally. I'm not saying you're going to be stood there with, like, sleeves halfway up your arms. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't think it hangs right on taller frames. You know what I mean?
No. I get what you mean. Yeah, I mean it's all very different looks for different people. So I have no idea.
By all means, get a short one and squeeze into it and wander around like you're the eighth Doctor and you've just regenerated and you can't find any new clothes.
Wait, hold on. I can go ahead, I can get a short outfit, and I can wander around as Tall McGann.
Hey!
Now, why aren't we recording that?
We are!
Nice.
Tall McGann, that's brilliant, that. Oh, I like that a lot. So are you and James still going to do an X-Files podcast?
I would like to. I don't know if he's caught up enough, is the thing. You
right,
know I mean?
Okay.
You know, tonight is the season finale.
Right.
And they are calling it a season finale now because apparently it has been renewed. Whether or not it makes it to a proper renewal, though, I don't know. But the Fox wants it, and they got to just get the actors and writers on board now. But it's ending on a cliffhanger tonight. So once that's all over and done, there'll be no more to watch. So we can't, like, sit there and do a podcast about, hey, last week's episode. It's got to be, hey. Yeah. That season, you know.
Well, I think my initial idea was to do it halfway through.
Yeah.
I thought in the UK we were getting it the same night or the night after.
I thought that it started later for you guys.
Right. I didn't realise how later it was. It was 8-part, wasn't it?
Six.
6-part, beg your pardon, right.
Yeah.
So it must have started for you in the first or second week of January then, didn't it?
Yeah, no, it started the 24th, January 24th.
January 24th. Has it been on weekly? Or has it been a week where there's been two on?
There was 1 week where there was two on. It was it opened with 2 days, so it was the 24th and the 25th was episode 1 and 2.
Okay.
And then after that, it's been weekly.
Okay. Okay.
Which blows because it was Sunday and Monday. All right, so I was able to see Sundays, and I had to wait to get the episode from iTunes for Tuesday on Tuesday for the Monday episode that I had to miss because I worked late. And then every other Monday has been, am I going to get to watch it tonight? No, I'm not. Am I? No, shit. The patients are late. God. And then sometime and now, so I actually set up the TV in the waiting room at our office so that it's stuck on channel 29, so that I can, when the patients are done, if I get done like really close to 8 o'clock, I am just telling my staff, shut the hell up and leave behind me and don't interrupt me because I'm sitting in this waiting room until the show's over, which means I have to drive home a whole hour late, but yeah. It's worth it so I can watch it when it airs, you know?
Okay. So is it worth watching the series in a whole, as a whole, do you think, in one go?
It's not... yes and no. Yes, just because it's so short and they're all right. But no, in that it's not really one continuous story. Okay. Unfortunately, I was hoping when it was announced, I was hoping it was going to be, as David Duchovny kind of described it, as like a 6-hour movie. But it's not. It's not a 6-hour story. It's the first and last episode are a 2-parter. Essentially, they're like a continuation of the story that's being told there, and then all the stories in between 2, 3, and 4. 2, 3, 4, and 5, rather, are just separate individual cases, Monster of the Week stories, as they used to be called. So they're good. I'm really kind of going to base my whole overall opinion on tonight's episode because, you know, as we've talked about before, I'm really into the mythology, and Chris Carter apparently has changed things up with it. But the question is did he change it too far is the problem? I can take certain changes, but there are certain things that happened in the past that you just kind of can't ignore, you know, like you have to, if you're going to ignore them or if you're going to change them, you really got to give us some explanation. And we only have 45 minutes for him to cover a whole hell of a lot of ground. If this new truth that he's giving us is indeed the new truth, you know?
Yeah.
But I will say, episode 3, is written by Darren Morgan, and he had written a lot of like the funnier episodes of the season. And episode 3 is pretty damn brilliant. It's got a really neat idea to it, I thought, anyway. But on the whole, I've enjoyed it. They said Glenn Morgan was talking about his particular episode, and he said that if they had, like, a full season, for instance, all of their episodes, for the most part, particularly his, which dealt with a personal aspect of Scully's life and a Monster of the Week case, he said if we had a full season... these would have been, my one episode would have been 2 separate episodes. So there is some issues there with at least 2 of the stories where the writing, you can tell they're trying to cram everything in that they want to cram in rather than have it be 2 episodes the way it should have been. It's not terrible, but there are just things that could have been better with it, you know. But I've enjoyed it. I've liked it. I'm really looking forward to tonight, and I'm really nervous about what the hell he's doing with mythology. So we'll see. But it's good. I like it. I would recommend it still. It's still fun.
Okay. Me, I think James and I are planning on doing a Ripper Street one as well.
I think that just hit Netflix here too, so I think I can finally start catching up on that.
It's probably Amazon, isn't it?
I don't have Amazon.
Oh, right, okay. So, what, Ripper Street's on Netflix?
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird, because Amazon produce it now.
Do they?
Yeah, series 3 and 4 Amazon produced, yeah.
Yeah, let me see, because I thought it was just on here. Ripper Street, new episodes. Yeah, season 3. Oh, whoops, I didn't want to hit play.
Well, we're up to series 4 now. It's really, really very good. So I'm looking forward to talking with James about that, if we can get our heads together and hammer down a time for that.
There's only 8 episodes, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so season 3 is on here, definitely not season 4. And that's cool. I don't have Amazon. They just announced something over here recently that some judge somewhere, I forget which particular court, what particular system, anyway, announced that cable companies, boxes like Apple TV and Roku and all those other kind of, you know, home entertainment boxes and so on, should be able to get cable TV. Whereas cable companies, you know, they generally make their money over here in the U.S. by renting cable boxes to the people who are buying cable from them. So instead of like the monthly fee that you pay to get cable coming to your house to watch your cable channels, you're paying this monthly fee to rent a box which allows you to view them. Right. So this judge just voted that, or ruled rather, that boxes like Apple TV, which is something that I have, should just be able to go ahead and pick up cable, period, because it's already there. It does the same kind of a thing. Why should these people have to pay rental fees for a box when they already have something in their home that does the same thing? The problem is now that if that's the case, if that's the ruling, and the cable companies are going to be pissed off that they're not going to make money on their rental boxes, the issue is going to be, well, what's going to happen then? Are all these individual cable channels then going to become apps on things like the Apple TV? And then when they are an app, is there a fee for a subscription service to that channel then? Mm. Is that how they'll make their money back? So this was my fear, because things like Netflix and Hulu, I thought were great. You know, $8 a month to just watch whatever content they had. That's really not bad at all. But then it was like, okay, well, Amazon's getting in the game, of course. And then, you know, a lot of the cable channels are putting their apps on Apple TV already. And a lot of those pay cable channels are, sure, you can watch our content for a subscription service. And then it's like, you know, this great idea, of course, has to be bastardized just like everything else. So You're going to end up paying more to watch the TV shows you wanted to watch than what you were paying for cable. All because we now have this, quote, freedom to watch them on our other devices. So and where I was going with this is, I don't have Amazon because I didn't want to have to pay, you know, $8 on like five different things to equal what I was paying on cable. You know, I really just figured I'll take whatever comes to Netflix, and maybe if there's another service out there, fine. But it seems like a great thing is happening that's just going to get totally screwed over here.
That would be unfortunate. I think with Amazon, I have Amazon Prime.
Right.
And so you get the Amazon Instant Video as part of that. And
gotcha.
The year before, my Amazon Prime came to an end just before Ripper Street started. So Ripper Street Series 3, which we just mentioned. So what I did was I then purchased Amazon Instant Video for like 6 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever it was, so we could watch Ripper Street Series 3. And then I cancelled the subscription until I took out another Prime, which was about October, just gone. So at least you have that flexibility with it. But like, I'd be seriously concerned if we were in the same situation as you.
Yeah, I'm really hoping it doesn't kind of lean that way. Like what I'm hoping is that cable right now, the way cable works is, if you buy a basic cable package, you have access to like 200 some odd channels, maybe more. I don't really know. But then there are channels like Stars and HBO, which are add-on subscriptions. Okay, so you can pay more to get these other paid service channels.
Yeah.
So my hope is that if the ruling is as it is, that you're not allowed to, or rather that, you know, if you have an Apple TV or a Roku, that you should just be able to get cable on that box. It just means that the cable companies can't charge you a rental fee for their boxes, and you're still paying your regular cable subscription to get basic cable, and then any additional channels like that, which we're always pay or still pay, like nothing really changes. You just lose the rental fee for a box. You know what I mean? That's really what should happen, but I just don't foresee cable companies losing that much money without finding a way to replace it is the issue, you know? So I'm fully expecting it to be, hey, you can watch any channel you want. Here's a monthly fee for those channels, you know? And when you think about it, like if they did something like, hey, let's even make it be, it's $2 a month, you know, for each individual channel. Sounds like it's a great thing. $2 a month, nothing. But then when you think about it, you had like 200 some odd channels, you know? And no, you're not going to subscribe to all 200 channels, but how many channels would you subscribe to, and how much more would that equate to, you know?
That's all from this week's podcast. With a K, from Brian and myself, it's goodbye.